Welcome to FSHD Straight Talk, the podcast where we dive deep into living with FSHD. I'm your host, Tim Hollenbach, and I'm on the journey with you. Having FSHD, I understand the challenges it brings to patients and their families. We're in this together, and this podcast is a space where we swap stories, share advice, and talk to experts to get the latest news. There's plenty to say about living with FSH muscular dystrophy, so let's get straight to it. Welcome to FSHD Straight Talk. I'm your host, Tim Hollenbach, and thanks for finding the show. You can find it everywhere you find those podcasts, especially on Spotify, anywhere. Subscribe so you get all the great up-to-date information, as well as rate the show if you can. Spread the word. It helps a lot doing me that favor, doing the show a favor of getting this word out. Our guest today is going to be one that kind of pulls no punches, helps out in the chapters in New York, New Jersey area. Dave Rubin's going to be our guest today. So sit tight, enjoy this great episode. Before we get there, though, I guess I wanted to also plug another one of our FSHD groups. It's the Young Professionals. FSHD Young Professionals, it's like based off of social media support group focused on encouragement, empowering young adults. I don't think I qualify. But if you do, I think you need to check it out. It impacts people that are still making their way, building their careers. It is hosted by other volunteers within the community. So mark your calendars for the second Tuesday at 7 p.m. East, 4 p.m. Pacific, and the fourth Saturday at 11 a.m. East, 8 a.m. Pacific. Once you join the group, you'll need to register. And then you'll be sent that regular reminders of the Zoom link, and it's all done virtually. So check out the young professionals out there. Which kind of leads me to, I guess, our pre-show point today on FSHD Straight Talk. And that is, if you're diagnosed at any stage, you're going to have to learn to adapt, not just in what you do as daily living aids, maybe medical devices. Those things are going to start playing their role. But also, are you making money? Are you adapting in your work? For me, I think my advice to that point, because I've had to make those changes. I always had a physical job. Everything from stocking shelves in a warehouse and pulling orders for customers. And we're talking large quantities of products, heavy products, all the way to kitchen and bath remodeling company, like iron tubs, wheeling those into people's homes. I don't know what the hell I was thinking. I had that around 2019, I had that job. It wasn't that long ago. I don't even know how I did that. So now more of a seated desk job, but then of course, trying to stay active through all that. You have to learn to make those adaptions and kind of be ahead of the curve. So use like the Young Professionals group or Feeling Fit with FSHD, along with other social media platforms to kind of help you educate yourself of being more proactive. And it's not a matter of when this disease is going to attack you to a way where maybe you can't do the certain things, if it's going to do it, it is when. So if you can forecast that and be prepared, if it means getting different education, if it means, getting trained in different types of roles or jobs, or even looking within the current place that you work, sometimes you can see a different role that might suit you. It gets into a slippery slope of how much you tell your boss of what you're dealing with and this and that. And I'm not an HR professional whatsoever. So that advice I can't really give you and say, go this path. But all I can tell you is that you're going to have to cross it at some point. So make sure that you're gathering the information you need. How do you approach your employer if you want to stay internal in your company and make those changes and adaptions as the disease progresses? Or what are you doing externally as getting either different education, different training to make a transition to a different job? One of the things I did, of course, was go from physical work to more of a desk work, but still had some type of ties into inventory and product movement and distributorship. And of course, my love for working with a nonprofit did help, and the right timing helped as well. I was very fortunate to find what I find. But I also think I coach baseball. How long can I physically do that? So owning a baseball organization can kind of help me transition, trying to think ahead a little bit, getting people around me that can still do those things physically while I help do the support side of a business such as that. So make those adaptions. I think that's a little bit of my key point for today. So follow the show for sure on Spotify and those places. Lastly, please email me, fshdradio@fshdsociety.org is the email address. Love to hear from you. keep me keyed in on what's going on in your life. If you want to be on the show or you want to promote someone to be on the show, you know, tell me about those people. Tell me about yourself. Love to hear your FSHD story and book a time to be on the podcast. I mean that. I'd love to hear from all of you and have you be on the show and share your story with others. You could be the inspiration that someone needs to hear. And that's going to lead us to our guest today, who is David Rubin from the New York, New Jersey area, kind of working on the chapters there. So I'm looking forward to sharing that episode with you. That's coming up next. Welcome all to FSHD Straight Talk. It's still tough for me to kind of convert that from the FSHD Society radio show. It's still kind of the same premise, but we're really concentrating more and more on the patients, the people involved with the disease, even the family members, caretakers, et cetera, and bringing those people to the forefront of these episodes as we move forward with this podcast format. I'm super excited to bring each episode to you each month as we try to give you two a month at least into what's going on with people within our community. One of those great people that are a part of this is David Rubin. He is here with us today. He introduced himself a little bit. Hey, David, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks, Tim. Thanks for having me, and my pleasure to be here.
Now, you're a person that has FSHD, those that may or may not know. Is that right?
That is correct. I was diagnosed in 2001, the age of 49.
Okay. And so when that moment arrived, what kind of drew you to get that diagnosis? What was the path to that?
You know, it was sort of interesting. I had some unnecessary shoulder surgery, as it turns out. And you know, as part of this disease, obviously, that had the weakness in the shoulder, but it was diagnosed as a rotator cuff issue.
Okay.
And I went to physical therapy following the surgery. And the physical therapist actually noticed I wasn't getting much better and saw winging in my scapula and actually scared me more than the necessary. He told me that, you know, the only other time he had seen that is he had a patient with ALS. So he suggested I go to the Columbia Neurological Institute, and I went there, and the doctor there diagnosed me in minutes.
Oh, wow.
And then gave me the, and then, you know, wanted me to take the genetic test, which I did. The interesting part was I had no serious symptoms or manifestations at that point. So, and the doctor said to me, gave me really sort of a low level diagnosis and said, you know, you probably have some shoulder pain when you get older. Mm. So I really, as a result, kind of thought nothing of it.
Yeah.
You know, went home, told my wife that, said, you know, when I get older, I'll have some shoulder pain. I have this disease. And that's pretty much all I was told. Mm. So, you know, the unfortunate part of that is that I was probably in denial for years following that. And then as I started to starting to have some leg pain and things, I was seeing a physiatrist who gave me a more realistic understanding of what this disease was really about longer term. And I started to, and I think one of the things, Tim, that, sorry from just running away with this, but that we as a group should focus probably attention on, I'm glad the, and hopefully your sessions help, is dealing with the emotional and mental elements of having this disease, and yeah, you know, and of the stages we go through. So I told you I went through a stage of denial or just sort of ignoring it for a while, and so I have to move around now and then for comfort, and something you shouldn't do, but And then it, yeah, you go through a little of the poor me's, and you go through, you know, all these different stages of what's going on, and then finally, at least in my stage, get involved to say, hey, how can I help do something about this and help push towards a treatment or a cure.
Right. So it felt to me then there was a concern. Go to a doctor, or basically the PT knows some constraint, and we've heard that before. Right? The scapular winging. Pretty common. I had the same outside medical, you know, people saying that looks different, you know, never really made much thought of it.
Right.
So it's in front of a physician. But then when you saw that first physician, it feels like they kind of downplayed it a little bit.
He downplayed what it would mean. And what really threw me was he obviously knew this disease because he diagnosed it so quickly. You know, I had me do a few things of, you know, try not to let him lift my eyelids up and a few things and diagnosed it very, very quickly. So I figured when he told me what my ailments were going to be, that he really knew this disease and that's what it's going to be. No big deal. So, you know, I don't know if he didn't know. I don't know if he, I've never seen him again. So I don't know if he didn't know. I don't know if he just was, didn't want me to feel bad. Well, I don't know
what right. it was. It's kind of the opposite of the doom and gloom.
Exact opposite. Yeah. Like sort of, you know, when you're an old man, you'll have some, you know, some pain.
Yeah. Well, and that then to me leads to where, okay, then someone else talks about it with you, the next
yes.
person.
And the physiatrist says, yeah. Well, you know, he's the one who started to notice that I was starting to get some foot drop, that I couldn't walk on my heels, that I, yeah, that there were other issues associated with this. And he was more honest with what the prognosis was, but also said, you know, if it gets worse, come see me. There's not much I can do for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so
did the fear escalate at that point? You talked about being scared, you know, especially when ALS was talked into the equation. But when you saw that second person, like, well, these things are kind of bad. And this is more of what it looks like in your future. Did that draw more panic in your mind?
Maybe a little bit, but not that. I was still active. I was still, I used to like to ride my bicycle. I was still doing a lot of bike riding.
Mm-hmm.
I was still, you know, going swimming in the ocean. I was still going for walks, going on hikes. I was still doing a lot of the things that I had been doing. So I wasn't really, I thought it was going to slow me down, but not stop me until it's probably been only the last 5 or 6 years that it's stopped me from doing things. I mean, I'm fortunate compared to some, I can still walk. I can, you know, basically get around. I can do things. But I have pain and I have some other issues. I can't, like, if I go in the ocean now, I need somebody to help me out. You know, you have that ledge when you're coming out of the water. I need somebody to help me up that ledge.
Okay.
And I can't run, you know, walking. I have drop foot on both feet. So I need to wear braces. So it's had more of an impact in those last 5 years. And it has had on me, and more I'm concerned that since I've learned it's a genetic disease, I'm certainly more concerned for my kids, none of whom have shown symptoms yet, but they're all young. They're all younger than I was when I started showing symptoms. Yeah. And I have one grandchild, another on the way, who I love dearly. So my concern is, look, whatever's in store for me is one thing. Mm-hmm. My concern is them.
Yeah.
You know, if I never get cured of this, but I can get them cured of it or not have to do this, that's my focus.
Was that some of the motivation to get even more so involved then with, if it's the FSHD Society and the community in general?
You know, yes, it was. You know, my family has told me that I have an ego that thinks that if I get involved in something, I'll drive it to an end. So there's probably some of that in there.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, I was an executive in a business, and I know how to organize things and get things done. Mm-hmm. And I was retiring, and I felt that would be, you know, a good use of my time, but you know, a better use of my time than looking for another job would be focus on this disease.
So in your career world, in your working time, you said you were Was it a business owner? Were you kind of an entrepreneur? It sounds like you were in points of leadership within business.
Yeah, I had been a business owner, and then I merged my business in with. I had been a business owner of a consulting firm. Mm-hmm. I merged the consulting firm in with a large accounting.
Oh, okay.
Firm at the time, accounting and consulting firm, and I ran a big portion of their consulting practice. Mm-hmm. And you know, the issue was, ironically, it changed right in the year I announced my retirement, but with the pandemic, but. You know, traveling, you know, 100,000 miles a year or so was becoming more and more progressively more difficult for me.
Yeah.
So that became one of the factors in making a decision to retire. There were others. I can't say that the disease is fully why I retired, but it certainly was a contributing factor.
Mm-hmm. And definitely, it sounds like then a shift, like you said, your attention then went to kind of attacking the disease, curing it to some degree, right, to whatever you could do with the skill set you had. So then you chose to then work with FSHD Society?
Yeah. For the first 6 months, I made my family miserable being retired. they might say it was a year, but I'll say 6 months. I'll say it was six months.
Like a year? Yeah, yeah.
Right. Yeah, being a guy that had meetings every 15 minutes to you know, I don't have to wake up in the morning any particular time,
yeah.
was a transition, you know?
Hmm.
And then I started thinking a lot about what to do. I took on a personal consulting assignment with somebody with a small business for about a year. I did that. And then that's when I realized I don't want to do this anymore. I want to focus on helping with the chapter. And, you know, Beth Johnston came to me from FSHD Society and said, you know, there is nobody running the New York chapter. And she said, one of the challenges had always been that walk and roll
mm-hmm.
didn't work as well in the New York area.
Yeah.
So we did the magic show. I started the Magic for a Cure.
Nice.
And yeah. We did that 2 years in a row. And then we decided, you know, we could do walk and rolls, and we did a walk and roll at the Jersey Shore.
Okay.
And so that was this year we did that. Set records for the most number of people attending a first year walk and roll and the most money raised for first year walk and roll.
Mm.
So at that point, about a year, 2 years ago, I said, all right, I'm willing to take over the chapter. Let's see what we can get rolling here and see how New York can contribute more as in the past and how we can do more for New York as well.
How did that growth now, you know, evolve? How has it been evolving?
It's been slow going, but we're getting there. We now have somebody who's interested in doing a walk and roll on Long Island.
Okay.
So we can maybe get that one going along with the Jersey Shore one, which we'll do again. We're looking to see, is there anything we can do in Manhattan or what we can do in Manhattan itself to try to get something going there? Maybe another magic show, or, you know, although I think they've taken that on the road. Mm. And we're trying to come up with ideas as to how we can, you know, begin to raise funds. We're doing meetings every 2 months now for New York.
Okay.
Which hadn't happened at all. So now we have the Zoom meetings and people get to ask questions and get to be engaged. Mm-hmm. So it takes time, Tim, I think, for the community to grow. And I'm very well aware that people get on these calls and they're in different stages of
mm-hmm.
their careers, their ability to put time in, their own acceptance of the disease, their, you know, and so there's different places people are. So we have to work it so that over a period of time and more people will get involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I found the same thing, the difficulties in growth. I'm here more in the North area in Wisconsin, very difficult. Had a couple little chapter meetings to start things off, maybe getting like one or two people only, and still felt like it was worth the efforts, and it's kind of fizzled even more so since, but you know, I direct my attention more to this podcast format. I give a lot of credit to those that are running the chapters and doing the walk and rolls. In your case, also doing other events on top of multiple walk and rolls. That's pretty incredible. I'm curious to know, like, the magic show, how did that idea come? How did that evolve? Because that's very
unique. Actually evolved out of the magician is a almost lifelong friend of my youngest son's.
Okay.
Okay.
Nice.
I've known him since, you know, he's 30 now. I've known him since he's in third grade. And he's been doing magic since before I've known him.
Wow.
And he had a, I knew that he was part of a show in New York City, a magic show that was, you know, sold out two shows a week and was doing very well. He left that and was doing other magic on his own. And so I knew how you know, this was not your kid's party magician. This was a real qualified magician.
Yeah.
So I knew we could leverage that. He was so close to the family. I knew even if he wasn't going to charge us his normal fee even. So it all worked out from that from that perspective. So we were able to get it going. And then we had two successful shows in Hoboken, New Jersey. We had to keep the cost down of the venues and all. We raised a little over $50,000 each time.
Wow, that's substantial. And
this year they did it in Naples, Florida.
Okay.
Okay. And they raised, I think it was in excess of $120,000.
Oh my gosh. That's incredible. Okay? That's incredible.
Yeah, so I've suggested, the problem with the magic show is you do it for a couple of years and then in a specific geography, then it's going to trail off in attendance because people have seen this magician.
People have seen it.
So I suggested that they bring this on the road, the FSDHD Society, to major areas like, San Diego or Chicago or, places where you can get an audience and bring it on and do one or two shows a year.
Wow, that's a great idea. And so far, so good. Is it going to continue on? You went from your area then to Naples. Is it going to continue to travel forward?
Well, FSHD Society has to decide that. I know the magician, John Stessel is his name, is willing to do it.
Okay. Well, that's a step in the right direction.
Like this year he went to Florida. He stayed in somebody's guest house, one of the people that was running it. And
yeah.
There was no cost for that, and he did the show, and it was a huge hit.
That's awesome. And the money raised to me is just it's just unbelievable. It's just one night. It's just
one night. Yeah,
it's phenomenal. Phenomenal.
No, there's a little more cost than with a walk and roll, but
I suppose. But I like the uniqueness, and when different areas do different things to kind of bring what's popular in that particular state or that particular town or city, and they kind of formulate a plan that, okay, walk and rolls are great, but hey, we're kind of known for this, and how can we use that to leverage more dollars?
There's barbecue. There's someone who does a barbecue contest. There's music. Yes. Exactly. How do you leverage those local interests?
Yeah, absolutely. Now up here it'd be beer and brats, so I'm not sure.
Okay.
That will go, but I don't know. It's not a bad idea, right? I mean, I just thought of that now in this moment.
I'll come for some beer and brats. Tell me when it is. As long as it's not in the winter.
That's true. I don't want to. Yeah, you can come for our summers. It's a little more fun to grill out here in the summertime. Yeah. That's probably a good idea.
I have been to Wisconsin in the winter.
It's tough. It's terrible.
It's tough.
Now, you mentioned a great point earlier. You talked about, this disease does affect us all physically in one fashion or another. Then there's that emotional side, the way it kind of attacks us that way, mentally. I guess kind of speak to that. Is one you think affect you more than the other, physical versus mental side, emotionally?
It did. I mean, I was in some unusual sport, not normal sports, I guess you call them. I was a swimmer through college.
Okay.
interesting, of the same story that I read on Chip Wilson, that I couldn't do butterfly either. Like, why couldn't I do the butterfly? I couldn't get my arms around, right?
Right.
And, but I was a competitive swimmer, and I also then was a competitive motocross racer.
Oh, wow.
So
that's got to be stressful, right, on the arms then?
It was very stressful on the arms. I didn't know I had the disease. So, you know, when I was doing that, so I stopped doing that around age 20.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting because I bought my kids a dirt bike and said to myself, well, if they really get into it, then maybe I'll buy one for myself.
Yeah.
Probably, fortunately, they didn't. They liked it, but not enough, like we're going to go every weekend or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I rode theirs, and I immediately went down, like I took a sharp corner and went down. So I didn't get hurt, but I, you know, I realized now it was because with my shoulders, I couldn't hold it up.
Right.
I didn't realize that at the time. I just thought, why'd I fall?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so my point is, Tim, too, I enjoy those. I love being in the ocean. My friends tried to get me to surf. I was a little too, I didn't never really get into surfing that much, but I love being in the ocean, riding waves and doing all that. So these kinds of things that I can't do as much of or can't do as aggressively, I miss that. I was a very physically active person. Mm. And, you know, that, and by, as I said earlier, bike riding, like when I would ride, I'd ride a lot.
Yeah.
And now I can't so as much. So, those things that did affect me and did upset me for a while, but I've sort of moved on from needed to take up other hobbies.
Mm.
So I took up cooking and that's mostly the hobby I've taken up, and doing stuff for the FSHD Society and focusing on investing a little bit, but that's it. But the physical things, I have to settle with just working out.
Yeah. I can understand that point of view for sure. There's many times where, I'm still involved in youth sports a great deal, which when you're a coach, you don't nearly have to do the things like the players are doing, but you wish you could demonstrate it better or so forth. And it offers its different challenges. But I do, there is definitely times, it's almost like a vision back to, like, did I live that life? Like, that was me that did those things?
Yeah.
I used to love just to play pickup games of ice hockey. You're in Wisconsin, that's not that uncommon in the winter to pass the time, if it's, skiing or snowboarding and those things happen here. But ice hockey, I loved it. Just being out there, just picking up random games with people, you don't even know them. You have a common interest to just getting on the ice and just play and just hearing the sounds of that game, the puck hitting, the skates, the camaraderie, all
people
those
hitting, the people hitting.
Well, we got to be careful, right? Right.
Yeah, you got to be.
But you're right. It was like, the competitiveness and like, where do you find that? How do you replace it? And I've definitely found like, okay, I cannot replace skating. I can't do that anymore. Trust me, I think often like, oh, maybe I can just try it. Maybe I could just try like you, maybe with like bike, like, okay. And then if I fall, I fall. But then, it's always the risk factor. Is that can be worth the reward of kind of reliving it? And can I really do it? Is there an adaption to it? But it sounds like, David, you've kind of like decided, okay, I can't do those things, but I'm going to adapt to do other things. You mentioned cooking, attention to FSHD Society, kind of feeding your passion in different ways.
The reality is though, it doesn't replace it.
Mm.
That pain still exists there a little bit. I've thought about go-karting. Should I try go-karting? I don't, something like that. I just, I think there would actually be, this sort of reminds me of a New York session I should have, and maybe it should be broader, of how do people get fulfilled? How do they replace the things they've lost?
Yeah.
The abilities they've lost, how do they change their life and find joy, in new things? It might be worthwhile to examine that and talk to people about that and understand how they do that.
And to be kind of the devil's advocate in that, you say fulfillment. I mean, the pessimist would say, but it's still not the same. It's still not the same. And if it's not the same, then forget it.
Yeah, I would disagree with that. I would say,
good.
You know, find, like, the issue is, you know, I spend a lot of time telling myself, and I do feel this way, but sometimes I have to convince myself that I'm a very lucky guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that I had a good career. I was, you know, I needed to retire, but I was able to retire. That's another
right.
And then I have a great family, and, you know, one beautiful grandchild. I assume another beautiful grandchild on the way, and just, you know, like, and so I should enjoy it. I should be happy for those things, but you still want to do your own thing. You still want to have your own joy. Right. And so I think if people sit there and say, you know, there's a lot of things I've never done in my life that I'm sure could bring me joy if I discover them.
Mm. That's true. Yeah. It's definitely one of those lines that we kind of walk on, right? It's we know the life we had, and there's that point where it's not just even the diagnosis. I mean, that gives you the knowledge, but it doesn't necessarily change you in an instant physically. And then this like slow drift into this other realm of your life where you have to say goodbye to things that you used to do and love to do and what you thought maybe defined you, you know, to some degree, and your interests and things. And then we have to try to shift and go, okay, what can I do now? And I know there's a lot of great leadership people within the FSHD Society that, you know, become chapter directors, walk and roll leaders. And you can tell that they were leaders in their industries or leaders of people, or they were coaches, or, you know, those things maybe they couldn't do as much. They're using that as a vessel to say, well, I can still do this, and then make that impact. Do you find that the work you're doing with FSHD Society, how does that compare to the work you did when it was a career?
I'm able to use my one of my jobs in consulting was build new practices within the firm.
Okay.
So I became, you know, so I was pretty driving to get things done, you know, making a dollar look like $10, mm-hmm. you know, to get to you know, make a budget stretch and drive efforts and being a typical impatient New Yorker. You know, we're all assets in the end to my career. Some things that, you know, I've certainly mellowed as I retired, so that's probably would have benefited me even in my career. But I think those skill sets apply to the way I'm trying to drive the chapter and not let a setback set you back.
Mm.
Right?
Mm.
So
And
know how to continue, to, you know how to bounce back a little bit and drive and continue getting things going. And so I think that those skills have really, those skill sets that I developed, that business maturity, if you will, that I developed, the entrepreneurial spirit, all I think contribute to helping me get the New York chapter, which was for all intents and purposes dormant, going.
Yeah, and I think that helps.
Is that a terrible towel, by the way, I'm seeing?
It is. It is a terrible towel. You're noticing that now? Yeah, of course. In Wisconsin. Can you believe it?
In Wisconsin. My son in New Jersey, a huge Steelers fan.
Really?
Yeah.
I should be talking to your son then right now.
Yeah. I mean, gigantic Steelers fan. And he matter of fact, he went to 3 games this year, I think, in Pittsburgh.
Wow, he's way ahead of me. I've not been to one game in Pittsburgh yet in my life, yet I'm still a Pittsburgh Steelers fan. Figure that one out.
He goes once a year, and this year he had a chance to go 3 times just because other people are going. So he went to
Awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, it is one of my little things that people kind of notice that. And of course, you know, I do get questions about other things like the band over my other shoulder. Who's that? And this and that. It is remarkable what I get in emails sometimes. It has nothing to do with the show in general. It just has to do with my habits of the show or like what is in my background. It's always fun. And I love that when people interact. And What's been the, I guess that the talking about that, talking about the interaction within people, I get some emails about the show and myself and this, that, which I love. How has the connection been then, you know, within your chapter there in the New York area? Maybe even the moment, if you ever, I don't know if you did face-to-face meetings at any point, you know, gatherings outside of the walk and roll, but.
We haven't done a face-to-face meeting yet where we're talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
Largely because people in New York don't travel.
Oh, I suppose. Yeah.
You know, it's if you're in Manhattan, you don't come to New Jersey. If you're in New Jersey, right. you turn your eyes up and go into New York. And so,
yeah.
And same Long Island to New Jersey. It's geographically sort of isolated.
You are. Yeah.
So we haven't done, we're talking about doing a meeting though in Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
One of the New York City chapter members has volunteered their office to as a place we could hold a meeting. I could actually do one at my condo here in New Jersey in our common room, and I could also do one in my former office in New York.
Oh, nice.
So they would lend that to me. So I think we're talking about doing that. I sent out a survey because I wanted to feel how many people would come.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if
smart move. Yeah.
If we can get 10 or 15 people, great. If we're going to show up to an office and there's three people going to show up, then it doesn't make a lot of sense. So,
right. Then you might as well stick with the virtual.
Yeah.
Have you had the connection face to face in Walk and Roll or with someone else with FSHD?
Walk and Roll, yes.
Yeah.
I've gone to meet some people.
Mm-hmm.
And through the Magic for a Cure had about 100 great. People at each.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
At each event. And I think at our Walk and Roll, we had 50 people. So for first year, that's not bad.
That's great. And the reason why I bring it up is because, I mean, I assume the answer was yes, but I always have to ask because I found that those that meet someone with the disease, like for that first time, is it kind of surprises them how impactful it is. That experience to meet a complete stranger, but the commonness is that you both have FSHD. I had that interaction myself when I went to a Chicago chapter group meeting years and years and years ago. And that was kind of caught me off guard, to be honest with you. I didn't expect those feelings to be there. And then another baseball coach, ironically, that I kind of knew, and we were coaching in the same game. He was the opponent, and I was the other. And I walked across before the game and introduced myself to him, and his jaw dropped and he said the same thing. He was surprisingly emotional where he literally had to like walk away for a bit and kind of gather himself and go, I had to be here for these kids and like do this. And he's like, my mind is raised. Like, I've never had this happen before. So it was interesting. And I didn't,
he has FSHD.
And he has FSHD. So,
wow.
And then of course I got him on the podcast, at the end of last year. He was one of, the guest we had at the end of 2023, Michael Osborne. And so, and I wanted him to relive that experience, which he did, you know, on the podcast. And he kind of talked about what that was like. And he was same as me, like a little bit shocked. Like I didn't expect that. I didn't expect to be that emotional over just meeting somebody that has the same disease as I, but never has had that happen before. So, you know, hence we can understand how that feels. So I guess that's the question I ask you, David, is like, what was that feeling like for you the first time you met someone with the disease as yourself?
Yeah, it was, you are 100% correct. And it was emotional. Mm-hmm. On various levels. On levels of seeing, I was at a group meeting for FSHD Society, and on levels of seeing young people.
Yeah.
With the disease, on levels of seeing people in different stages, much further along, you know, much more debilitating than I currently was, or am, and then people who have much more mobility than I do. So seeing all of that drew up a lot of emotions, and I like you, I thought I'd be able to be very factual about it.
Right, right.
And I think this disease is more prevalent than we know.
I agree.
Okay. And it, you know, it's so undiagnosed. And And people don't want, my kids, for example, don't want to get a test because they have no symptoms and they're saying, why should I know until there's something closer for a cure?
Right.
And they're adults, so I respect their decision. But I think there's a lot of that. There's a lot of that, and there's a lot of my GP, when he heard what I had, said, he said, in a million years, I never would have diagnosed that. Now, I appreciate his honesty, but that's scary.
It is, because you can know that that's happening all over the place. It's just being missed.
Hmm. So I think, but like you, it does affect, and certain sites on Facebook, I won't name the specific sites though, but there's certain sites where a lot of the commentary and comments are, quite, they're on the sort of on the downside of, the depression side of the disease of, I'm in so much pain, or I have the, or I'm in so much pain, somebody please help me, or I've got these, I should be reading them, but I ignored them.
Mm. Why do you think that is?
Because I don't want to, I extrapolate that that's going to happen to me or could happen to me. And I don't.
Too close to home.
I don't want to deal with depressing stuff. I want to deal with the positive things I can do. This disease, in my mind, this disease is what it is, and it's going to affect me on its timeline, and there's nothing I can do about that.
Mm-hmm.
Except to help fight to get to cure it.
Right.
And to find treatments for it.
Mm-hmm.
To find out who has the best, at least the best physical therapy for it. And when something happens to you, like I had sciatica. Now the sciatica, I still have it, but not as badly. But the sciatica is certainly irritated by the FSHD.
Yeah.
Right? Because I don't have the muscles.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So when I get the sciatica, which makes it, man, made it very difficult to walk for several weeks, my thought is this permanent?
Mm-hmm.
Right? I'm sure you've been there with any ailment you get, any little pain you get, is this forever?
Yeah.
Right?
It's just this. The new metamorphosis of what this stupid disease now has given me.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I've even out loud said, well, that's new.
Yeah.
being affected by, like, okay, well, that one's new. I haven't had this one before.
Right.
So is this something I'm going to work through, is going to get better, or is this going to be permanent? Right. Good point.
And now I feel I'm starting to feel better. Mm-hmm. And I'm not 100% there yet, but I'm starting getting PT. I'm going to chiropractor. I'm starting to feel better. And I said, oh, okay, so I can, with the right regimen of things, I can repair this.
Yeah.
But I can't repair the disease, but I can repair the, the pain.
Right. Do you still have pain, though, regardless, even if you're working through those things, PT, et cetera, those treatments that you get, the things you do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, my calf, for example, is pretty, the muscle in my calf, in my right calf, is pretty gone.
Mm-hmm.
So I have nerve pain in my calf.
Yeah.
Almost all the time. I stretch a lot, but even with stretching, it's still there.
Yeah. Yeah, I just say it sometimes to people, they'll ask me. In fact, it just happened today. I work at a place with older people, they're volunteers, where I work for a nonprofit, and
mm-hmm.
it's very obvious, or I'm very open about what I have. And you know how you get someone to ask you how you're doing, but they're asking you really how is the disease doing, And I said, well, I still have it, it's still, it's painful and stuff. And he's like, oh, that's bad, blah, blah, blah. And I said, yeah, me, and I always kind of joke it off because I don't want to make them feel bad. Those that are asking, like, I don't want to, like you said, give them a doom and gloom, or, oh man, this sucks, or this and that. Try not to sprinkle a lot of negative in their life about it. Kind of like, hey, I'll be fine, but thanks for asking, more attitude. And I usually kind of convert it to, hey, me and Payne are just best friends. That's just how this works.
It just
how it is. I mean, there's nothing I can do about it. So the fuel I try to give myself is, I totally believe in life. You have choices. Most times it's two. You go this way, you go that way. You go up, you go down, you go, make a choice, go forward. And for for me, it's like, you know, what other choice do you have? Most of the times it's kind of made for you anyway, but like even to the working out or the PT, I like my PT guy. He's awesome. He actually used to be my old boss and he's super helpful. He treats me actually like a person that does not have FSHD. He knows I have it. He knows how to convert his exercises, but we rarely discuss, like, I don't know. He just makes me feel like an athlete that is trying to work through something. That's what he makes me feel like. And that's what I need. I don't need to be coddled and go to a neurologist PT. So they treat me totally different. It's like, no, I know you have this. Fine. So we adapt and do things. I'm going to make you feel like this kind of person. And that helps me. But there are definitely times, man, right? You don't want to do it. You got to make that conscious choice. Like, no, I'm going to do the PT here. Yes, I'm going to do this PT. Or, hey, I'm going to definitely go work out today of whatever that looks like. So one of my last questions for you, David, is like, what is your motivation to make sure that you say yes to those decisions to keep pushing forward?
My greatest motivation is I know that I'm going to feel much worse if I don't do it.
Right.
You know, I mean, I said I was an athlete. I've always worked out, you know. People look at me now and say, yeah, you were an athlete, you worked out, but I can't control that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was. And, you know, so I'm used to physical activity. And I know not only for the FSHD, but you know, I'm a 67-year-old guy. You got to, if you don't exercise, you're not going to have a good, even if I was healthy, not going to have a good life as you get older. So you need to exercise. And I feel real, after it, I feel really good. I mean, I do like the feeling of endorphins. And
yeah,
right. I think one of the negatives, my wife doesn't understand this as much sometimes, is we get tireder than afterwards than somebody else.
Yes.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of a crash, right? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, for me, like momentum is my friend all day. Momentum. I can't stop. Right. Got to keep going. I got to keep walking. Got to keep moving the best I can. Don't sit too long and so forth. Because momentum helps me. But soon when I get to 100%. The end of the day, I have said to my family, like, does anybody need anything from me? Because you know what? I'm about to be done for the day. When I am. Like, yeah. I don't want to regroup and I don't want to regenerate my energy again and then try to do something big again. Oh, no. You know, and, you know, it's like that shutdown period at the end of your day, you know? So I know that you're always trying to grow your chapter, David. And I guess I wanted you to get the time here within this podcast of, like, if people wanted to find you, contact you, be a part of your chapter, how do they do that? What's the best way?
NYC chapter at fshdsociety.org.
Easy, right, guys?
Easy. Yep. Or look it up on the website. Go to the website and find the New York chapter and email me. I check that email and would love, and there's a place to sign up. So would love to have you. And once you sign up, you'll be getting the emails of when we have meetings and what's new.
Beautiful. Awesome. Well, thanks, David, for being here. Jim,
thank you so much. It's always a pleasure talking to you. And thank you for this time and for your help in growing our chapter.
No problem. Love to do it. I'm glad we connected today and hope to do it again in the future. You take care.
Thanks. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That is David Rubin from the New York City chapter. Not a small task, folks, to build a New York City chapter and then goes into New York. I love his attitude, his go-gettingness, and that is exactly what New York is about from a person that's never been there. Not that I know, right? But that's always the reputation of a New Yorker, and it seems like David brings it, and I'm glad he was here to talk to us a little bit. So the takeaways for me, like, I love to kind of share my takeaways from a conversation that I have with these great guests that come on. I'm super excited to turn FSHD Society Radio to FSHD Straight Talk because we're getting right to it. Get right to the talk, get right to the heart of the matter. That's the disease. Yeah, it's great to talk about what's coming up in any type of treatments, cures, etc. But we need really these discussions to keep driving us forward, to get involved and to help each other stay more positive the best we can. some of the takeaways is don't let a setback set you back. David said that. And like, how do you exchange the fulfillment of this action, what you used to do, to what you can do now? They'll never be the same. I describe my ice hockey experiences. I love it. I loved it. I can still feel the cold air in my face now if I think about it. I can still hear the puck hit my stick. I can still feel the flow of my body across the ice as I glide. I can still feel all those things and think about them and be there again. And I miss it terribly. And that's just one factor of my life that I miss. There's so many others that I've had to say goodbye to, like so many of you have had to. But is there a glimmer of hope that maybe, A, like David said, there's then a cure if we can find a treatment now to help our kids and their kids and so forth? Or is there still a possibility, like, can we stop this thing and can we regain even to get some sense of that back? I mean, I know for some, even age is also a factor. It was described to me that FSHD is, you're going to age quicker. Not great. Very difficult, right, to deal with that. Things are going to happen faster. I don't know what the magic response is. Almost every guest I bring on, I ask them, you know, what advice do you give someone newly diagnosed and so forth? Because I wish I had that person in my corner. Closest I had was my manager at the time at MS, and she tried to comfort me and support what I was trying to cope with. And I don't know, you know, if I'm still totally wrapping my head around really what this all means. I think I have glimpses of stages of denial. I have glimpses of stage of anger. I have glimpses of stage of grief still. It's like always evolving and changing. And then a lot of times I'm distracted and I feel the sense of what I was mixed in with what I am now, what I can physically do and can't. And I feel like you all feel the same way. I think you're all at different points of that, where it's evolving constantly in your life. And, you know, like Amy Beckier, I remember when I had her on once, she talked about being a competitive golfer and this and that, and misses that. And it's not just the activities, even though that seems to kind of marry of what we can't do. It's usually an activity of some type. But I have not found, like, what is that coping? I don't know if there is. But I think there is advice within our community to kind of at least get us from day to day and to help us move forward and get better. So I don't know. It was great having David on for sure. He was a fantastic guest. I look forward to more being on the show. I also thank you all for being a listener on these podcasts, wherever you find me, that is like on Spotify and probably Google Podcasts and other places like that. I'm a Spotify guy. That's kind of where I find him. But you can always email me at fshdradio@fshdsociety.org. That's still the email address. Please do so. If you want to be a guest on the show, you want to share your story, maybe you feel you can help others, or you just want to share what you're dealing with and be a part of this, I'd love to have you on the show. So reach out to me for that. Show ideas, topics you want to talk about. As we evolve this platform, as it changes and grows, things hopefully will be added, maybe some hack tips we might add in and have some different guests talk about that and so forth. Good things on the horizon. I'm glad you're a part of it and part of this change. So thanks for listening. We'll see you next time, or maybe you're not seeing me, or just listen to me next time on the FSHD Straight Talk. Take care. Bye-bye.